Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley, the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the DS Radio Network.
That was the voice of Marty Oakley, who was the founder of Guardianship, Hospice, Black Farmers, and Animal Abuse Programs. Sadly, Marty passed on April the 1st, 2023. Rest in peace, Marty. We carry the torch. Good evening. I'm Marcia Joyner, and this is Betrayed by Hospice, where we share the reality about this so-called hospice compassionate service offered to our loved ones to help. We have witnessed their help in toxic drugs that put our loved ones into a coma, and they die from the drugs, starvation, and dehydration, and much sooner than they would have if they had never signed up for hospice. And this is done without the patient or the family's knowledge or their consent. It is stealth euthanasia, or adequately stated, premeditated murder. And the majority of people I've talked with say their loved one was not in pain or anxious when the drugs were started. And hospice is to minimize pain, not put person into a coma. And there may be some hospices that are pro-life and they don't murder people, but I don't know where they are. Tonight's program is a bit different than past programs, as we will have an open discussion with those who call in. And depending on the number of people that want to talk, I may have to limit some discussion to allow everyone the opportunity. So if you want to speak, select one on your phone, and when I bring you in, I'll announce your area code. Please don't use a speakerphone because it picks up every noise, and we won't be able to hear what you're saying. And if you don't mind, state your name, briefly tell us your story, and then if I have somebody else in the queue, I'll bring them on, and we'll be bringing everybody back online for a back-and-forth discussion, maybe to talk about the drugs that were used, the amount of time that your loved one was drugged before they passed, and other topics so we can see the similarities. There is a delay when speaking, so it's possible to talk over others, so I'll try to manage that. So let's get started. Tonight, I want to start with Liz Eisner. And some of you may already be familiar with her and know her as the founder of the Facebook group Murdered by Hospice. I came across her group in early 2018, 6 months after my mom was murdered, and I was searching to find out if her case was unique, and I found out there were others. I was number 140 in the group, and I was glad to have a place I could speak out with others who knew and understood my pain. I am personally grateful to Liz for having the courage to start the group, and I know it's been helpful to me and many others. And now we're 3,300 plus strong with others who understand, care, and need our help and give help to others. So with that, Liz, I want you to tell us why you started the group and give us insight into the group, and let us know what some of the issues that you have faced with administration, because there are many. So I'll let you roll, Liz.
Thank you, Marcia. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You were live.
Okay. I started the group in 2016 after my husband was murdered by hospice. I wanted to connect with other family members, victims, and warn the public. And that's why the group is public. We want people to be able to find us and join and tell their stories, ask questions when they're in that situation. And like you said, we have over 3,000 members, 3,300. We have people from all over the country, around the world. So the medical murder of the elderly, disabled, and too costly to care for is a worldwide agenda. Some of the members are healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, and others who know what's happening. They've seen it, or they've had a family member killed by hospice. Some of them have left the profession because of it. And some of the members' loved ones weren't terminal at all. They were illegally enrolled, some without their knowledge or consent. And some of these patients were people in hospitals, nursing homes, and instead of continuing to treat or care for them, they're told things like, there's nothing more we can do for you, or you'll get the same care you're getting now or better care in hospice. Or they were put in palliative care, not treated for anything, and then drugged to death. So some of the family members in our group were in guardianships, and then they were put in nursing homes where they were allowed to deteriorate from neglect, abuse, over medication. And when their state was drained, they were eliminated using hospice. We have people whose loved one is on hospice that realize they're being over-medicated and starved and dehydrated to death, and they try to stop it. But because they're not POA, they're powerless to do anything about it, so they have to sit there and watch their loved one being murdered. And it's very upsetting. Some of the patients are put on hospice just because they went to the hospital a few times. And as you know, hospitals can be fined and risk losing Medicare money for too many readmissions. And hospices directly advertise to the hospitals that they keep their patients out of the hospitals. So that eliminates that problem for the hospital. And
right,
some,
it's marketing.
Right. And we have members whose loved one was terminal but doing well, like my husband, walking, talking, eating, doing everything they were doing before that terminal diagnosis. But once hospice was started with their protocol, they died in a few days, and in some cases within minutes of being given the drugs.
Right.
So what we have
now,
here, and well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So what we hear in these cases and these stories is there's no informed consent about the drugs. Morphine's given to people without pain or when the pain's manageable without it. I mean, it's just pushed on everybody. Antipsychotics are given when there's no agitation. Ativan's pushed on them. They're not given food and fluids, and records are falsified. So these are all common things that we hear from the stories that we've experienced ourselves when our loved one was murdered. But that's the hospice protocol, and no one's held accountable, and that's why we're here. And that's why you started your
right.
podcast, and that's why I started my group.
Well, and some of the challenges that you face in the group with hospice nurses,
right.
You want to talk about that, about the attacks?
Oh, yes. We're constantly getting nurses that come in and say that they don't do that. You know, we're crazy. We can't accept our loved one's death, and that's why we're saying all these things. I mean, you know, they pretend that they had a bad experience to get into the group. They lie. And that it upsets the members. It upsets us. It upsets me to be told that I'm lying, you know, that it didn't happen when it did. I mean, we're not there, you know, spending a lot of time in the group, you know, because we think something happened. We watched it happen. We were lied to about the drugs when we asked about them. And we have the medical records, like I said, and, you know, we see the falsified documents. It's just, you know, it's just people won't accept it. And I think that the nurses, maybe some of them, maybe the new ones don't know what's going on, but a lot of them do, and they just want to attack us and, you know, save their jobs, you know, keep that squeaky clean hospice reputation going. You know, they want to discredit us. But, you know, we're there to give support, you know, to other people. And, you know, we've had people asking us questions, you know, my loved one is in a guardianship and, you know, where I don't have POA, what do I do? You know, how do I stop this? You know, or they want to know about the drugs, and we explain that. But, yeah, we put up with a lot in the group from people who who just want to cause problems and upset everyone. It's very cruel. Some of them, you know, put happy faces after the stories, you know. They think it's funny. These are not compassionate people. These are murderers.
Right.
They know what they're doing.
Right.
And like I said, they're just, you know, all of our complaints to agencies are just nothing's done. Nothing's done. And it's outrageous. And so, you know, that's another reason for the group. I wanted to spread awareness so this doesn't happen to anybody else.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's Facebook has a different algorithm. So sometimes people are let into the group without Liz
mm-hmm.
or I accepting them. And we do vet everybody. We go back into their profile and look to see if, you know, they have just, you know, selfies in there or, you know, are they making memes about hospice and they think it's fun
mm-hmm.
or are they a hospice nurse? They just didn't tell us. And before someone can post, we have to approve all the posts. So that's why sometimes it takes a while for your post to show, because Liz and I have to go in to review that to make sure that you're not a hospice nurse coming in there and trying to upset the group. So there is a lot to that. I'm going to go ahead and just remind the people that have called in since we started, if you want to speak, to press 1 on your phone, and you'll be put in the queue. And right now, I have somebody in the queue, area code 651, so I'm going to bring you live. Liz, I'm leaving you on.
Okay.
You'll still be on speaker. But I'm going to bring 651 in. State your name, if you will, and then you are live and on the air. 651.
Hi, Marcia. Thank you. It's Kimberly from Minnesota. Thank you to Liz as well, too, and I appreciate the opportunity to share my mother's experience this evening with, you know, with all of our group members and everyone that's listening.
Absolutely.
So I can start by telling you, and I know I've shared my story frequently in the group, but my mother was euthanized in a hospice in St. Paul in late January 2020, and what precipitated her trip to the hospice is she had quite a complex medical journey, but long story short, she was diagnosed with stage 3-4 small cell lung cancer on Christmas Eve of 2019. We went back to the local hospital that had performed a procedure that caused a fairly severe post-op injury about a year and a half or a year prior to that. So the diagnosis was a shock, and she didn't want to go to this particular facility. Unfortunately, we ended up going there. Of course, then came the palliative care team, you know, the oncologist. Basically, we were told there's nothing we can do. She can't tolerate any treatment because of her age. Now, keep in mind, my mother was a vibrant, wonderful 87-year-old woman. You know, she lived independently. She drove her own car. So prior to this diagnosis, yes, she still had ongoing health issues from the damage from the post-op injury, but, you know, she led her life independently and was, you know, in fairly good health when she had good days and bad days when, of course, she had, you know, issues. So thus began the journey into hospice. I tried repeatedly to stop her from going there. The palliative care MD, the lead, insisted that she revoke her her full code status and sign a DNR and a pulse telling us that she had to be admitted to the hospice as a DNR. She could not go as a full code. I later discovered that that was not true. From the moment we got into the facility, it was just horrific. Basically, from the moment she was admitted, they started terminal sedation, meaning they pushed Ativan, they pushed fentanyl, they even pushed methadone, and she said no, and I said no. So the second day that she was admitted, my mom said, you know, I have some concerns about what's happening. Can you go, you know, ask my nurse to come in? So I went out to the front desk and asked for, you know, her nurse to come in because my mom wanted to have her primary MD consult with the medical director and the nursing team. That's when everything really went south. Immediately, the medical director came into my mother's room, accompanied to leave, basically said I was interfering with her care. She needed to revoke my, you know, health carriage and MPOA status. The only way that she would be allowed to stay at the facility as if she revoked, you know, my HCA, which I had been since 2015. They banned me from the facility. They threatened me with arrest if I didn't come back. I was a wreck. I don't know what happened in those 7 days that I was banned from the facility. I do know that we had family, not family members, but friends and neighbors that went to visit, and they basically said my mother was in and out of a coma. It was horrific. So I was allowed to come back to the facility, and basically they euthanized her on January 27th of 2020. When I got her medical records, I was shocked. I guess I shouldn't have been, but I was. I mean, there was derogatory information about myself. They said that my mother said that I was interfering in her care, which was not true. They dropped her not once but twice to the floor. There were bruises on her arms. They gave her medications that she was allergic to. So she died from, you know, a toxic cocktail of drugs, dehydration, and malnutrition. The most egregious is I did some digging into the medical records and with this medical director's background. And, Marcia, I think I've mentioned this to you, that the medical director at this specific hospice facility, which is a Medicare-approved facility, has four medical malpractice claims in the state of Georgia over 300,000 K. And that's, you know, that's not a small error. So there's a lot happening, and how I found the group was I was happened to be scrolling through Facebook about looking for grief groups, and I stumbled upon the group, and thank goodness I did. It's just led me down a path that's really helped me, you know, kind of help process what's been going on, try to be that light and try to speak out about what happened to my mother. I did file a complaint with the state, actually, the day after admission when I was banned from the facility with the local Minnesota Ombudsman's Office. Nothing came of that. I tried repeatedly to reach out to the Minnesota Health Department, again, to file a complaint. Finally, last December of 2023, I got a response telling me that it's been 4 years since her death, and they could not investigate. The facility had been federally approved for recertification. There's just a lot that happened that went wrong. And unfortunately, I, like many of the other members in the group, I don't have any justice for my mother. And it's egregious, it's horrific, and it's just common practice that patients are being medically murdered in our facilities. And you don't necessarily need to be a terminally ill senior. It could be anyone in our community that, you know, across, you know, our country that is murdered by hospice, in a hospice facility or in their home.
You're absolutely right, and you've pointed out something that's very good for people to hear. You took mm-hmm. steps to save your mom. You were kicked out of the facility because they said mm-hmm. you were interfering with what they were doing, mm-hmm. which
yes.
is killing your mom. And then, you know, the whole time you're trying to seek justice, you're trying to save your mom, and then after it happens, you're doing all of the steps to try to get justice, and every single turn, you were turned down.
That's correct.
You know, and so some of the people have come in the group, and they have said, you know, well, if, and I hate that word for somebody to say, if this happened, because basically mm-hmm. you're calling us a liar. If that
yeah.
happened, why don't you get an attorney? Why don't you do something about it? And everything that you have said, that you've pointed out, you did.
Mm-hmm.
You went every single step that you could, and you still are. And, you know, I know you're still busy in Minnesota, you know, trying
yes.
to stop them from doing the assisted suicide, which,
yes.
you know,
the
you and I've talked about this. Why do you need assisted?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't need assisted suicide. You have hospice. They do the
well,
same
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Well, that's exactly it.
So,
and, you know, and yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Okay. And, you know, the sad part is that, you know, my mother, you know, they tried to claim that her cancer was so aggressive and it had, and you know, and she had mets all over her body. Well, she had a PET scan ordered at the hospital, and she was talked out of it. So I can't say 100% certain that she was, but the thing is they put her three times into a medical coma. I mean, she was in and out of a coma because she was drugged, but three times she woke up. Now, to me, and again, I don't think I pointed out, she was not in an active state of dying. She was alert. She was expressive. She was able to, and the food that they gave her was disgusting. It was like watery broth and like lukewarm sherbet. I mean, how is that nutritionally sound for a patient? And the sad part is she believed these physicians that, you know, they had her best interest. It was going to be comfort care. She was going to be comfortable. She wanted to go home. And that was our original plan. That, and it's throughout her chart, both at the hospice and at the hospital, and that she wanted to be at home. She wanted to be comfortable and be at home in her own surroundings. In fact, on January 21st, it was a few days before they killed her, she was awake and alert, and she said, I got to get out of here. She said, I rushed too fast. I went and hired a law firm in Minnesota that an elder law firm defense attorney was very helpful. We were going to actually file a junction with the court. In fact, we had it prepared. But the same day, I kept calling her and calling her. I kept calling back to the facility. Every time I got the phone, they always said to me, oh, well, she's sound asleep. That's another thing. There weren't phones in the patient's rooms, which I found very odd. And so, you know, and then and the attorney said, well, if your mother's in a coma, she can't sign any paperwork. So, you know, they did everything they could, you know, to kill her. And the tragedy is this facility is just, you know, it's heartbreaking. And then another thing, too, with the billing practices, what I kind of dug into as well, too, is how can a nonprofit facility that claims, you know, they claim that the care was free because Medicare does not cover room and board, you know, for hospice patients. So, as I did some digging and got the bill, you know, the explanation of benefits, for roughly 20 days, it was over $10,000 for her stay, and they only billed Medicare for two medications, actually the two meds that were medication errors that caused her to have an anaphylactic reaction, which they never treated, which happened to be on the same day of the 21st that we got the law firm and the judge involved. And so it's just lies. Like Liz, like you said, it's complete lies. I mean, they're fabricating. I mean, what they documented about my mother's chart, I mean, they just demonized me. It's not the truth, but it's horrific. And, you know, portions of her medical records were redacted. Another thing, too, the care plan with her allergies listed was not on the original care plan of the copy that they gave me when she was admitted. But magically, it happened to show up correctly when I got the medical records from the hospice, you know, 2 years after the fact. So it's just, it's cruel. It's just sick. And
inhumane.
You know, people need to be aware of it, of what's happening. And, you know, by bringing light to this, I'm hoping that it will change. You touched on the end of life legislation in Minnesota. I mean, right now, our members adjourn here on May of this year of 2024. And it looks like it may be dead at this point, but I'm sure that once they re-adjourn, you know, that issue will come up again. And it's
They'll bring it back up. Yeah.
Sure they will. It's,
To the other people that are on the line,
660,
I'm bringing you on. If you have something to say, area code 660. Area code 660. Okay. If you do have something to say, select 1. And let me see if this person wants to come on. Area code 816. If you have something you'd like to say, 816. Okay. All right. If anybody else does want to speak, just select 1 and I'll see your hand and I'll bring you on. Okay. Okay, I have somebody here. Okay, area code 662. You're live and on the air.
That's me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, hi. I'm Irene Guest. I've been a member of the group for a while.
You said Irene?
Yes, Irene Guest.
Yes. Yes, I remember seeing you in the group.
Mm-hmm. That's me. I mean, my husband was, you know, just murdered because he just wanted to continue treatment. He wanted to continue his full code, and the hospital essentially withdrew him from some drugs that were keeping him alive, and sort of crippled him and made him sick, and then, you know, used that, sort of held the thing over it like that, oh, well, we'll give him something for pain, but he has to be in hospice. And essentially, you know, they threatened me with, if you don't, you know, he'd been admitted 3 times to a hospital, and if you don't sign these documents putting him in hospice, we're going to put him where you will never see him again, and he will die alone.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's, you know, and this was a pretty vicious APS worker who they just, you know, abused me afterwards because they killed him. And then 12 days after he died, APS had me arrested because they said I abused and neglected him. He had been on a feeding tube for 7 years, never had any problems, was alive because I took care of him. And APS wanted to make a case that I hadn't taken care of him because he probably got sepsis from being on Eliquis, which is not what you're supposed to give somebody. And he took it for about maybe 2 weeks and then got sepsis. And it was just horrible. And 12 days after he died, they arrested me, took me to jail, fingerprinted me, told me, you know, you're being charged with, you know, abuse and neglect of your husband. And I was very fortunate. I mean, yeah, I've lost my husband of 46 years. I did manage to procure an attorney who got it put down, got it put away. He investigated. But I wrote, what makes my story weirder is I wrote to the APS agencies. There's apparently several of them. I wrote to them and told what these agents did. They had me arrested for cyber stalking for writing to the supervisors of these agents. Had me charged by the grand jury. That's, you know, it.
But they took him from you and made him sign DNR?
No.
And then they kill him and then they blame you?
The thing is he left from our house sick in an ambulance. Yeah. And anyway, he was hospitalized 3 times, went to nursing homes, where in the nursing home, he was on a feeding tube. They didn't raise his head. And the last time he went, he got sepsis. He'd get over it. He went to a rehab facility. The rehab facility wouldn't raise his head while they were giving him his tube feedings, and it coagulated in his throat, and that eventually cut off his oxygen, and he went back to the hospital. It was at the tail end of COVID. I couldn't get in to see him. I could only see him through the window. And I would go to the window, and he would be laying there. I fed him with a syringe 5 times a day. They had him hooked up to continuous feed. And his head was flat. You can't do that with a feeding tube. The man had a feeding tube for 7 years. And they allowed the formula to build up inside of his throat the last time around, and his oxygen fell. And he went back to the hospital. Well, apparently the hospital called APS saying I wasn't making good decisions. The hospital was, knew what had happened, the neglect that happened in the nursing home. The hospital apparently thought that since my husband had come back to their facility 3 times within 6 months, I think it is, or something, it was going to bring down their rating, with Medicare patients return. And so they called APS and said his wife seems incompetent to make decisions for her husband. Now, I had taken care of this man for 20 years, no problems. His doctors always said, you're doing a great job. He's alive because of you and everything. And then, just a couple of calls from an administrator at a hospital got APS to come in and effectively say, you need to put him in hospice. If you don't put him in hospice, if you don't do this, we're going to, get control of him, go to a judge, we'll put him where you won't. And she honestly said, you won't see him again. He will die alone.
Wow. That's just cruel. I am so sorry. I've got somebody else. We're going to we'll be bringing you back in, but I've got somebody else on the line.
Okay.
I'm going to put you back in the screening room, but I'll bring you back on again, okay?
Okay.
Area code 352, you're live and on the air.
Hi, Marcia. It's Beverly Calhoun. How are you tonight?
I am good, Beverly. I'm so glad you called in. I hope your hearing aid is working.
It's not doing too well, Marcia. I only have
one.
It's not the ear that I have the better hearing in.
Yeah. Well, you can hear what we're saying, though, right?
Yes, I can. And first, I want to say I'm not proud to be a member of Murdered by Hospice. I'm not glad there's a group called Murdered by Hospice. But my heart is so full of gratitude that there was such a group when I needed them the most. I was falling apart at what happened to my mother, and I'm so grateful to you, to Marnie, to Liz, Amy, Linda, Michelle, everyone who reached out to me. I can't even name all the ladies in the group who were so supportive of me during that time. Stacy, all of them.
Well, thank you. It is a good place to come, you know, that Liz has opened it up for us. And it's just heartbreaking to lose any of our loved ones.
And one thing I've noticed that hasn't been mentioned too frequently with the medication and drug usage, I stayed by my mother's side 3 days and three nights. No one offered me a meal tray. I was up there in Florida stranded because my daughter had taken me up. She had to come back home, and my sister was tied up and could not come down 3 days and three nights. And my sister finally came, and she insisted I leave the room, and I not left Mom because I prevented three doses of the medication being given to Mom until the administrator came in and told me I was interfering and they could have me removed from the facility if I continued interfering the nursing care. But my sister came and insisted I go out to the motel room, have a shower, and have something to eat. And I came back, Marcia, and I noticed my mom had been changed from what I had her in, changed in her hair like she'd been shampooed. And I really didn't investigate as much as I should have. And this is another thing that's been heavy on my heart. Because after Mom's passing, when I went to ready her and dress her, they placed fentanyl patches on her. And that's why they had not been coming in trying to give her the medication I refused while I was gone. They took the advantage to place fentanyl patches on my mother, causing her demise. So you have to check your loved one's body. Just not watch what they're bringing in orally or in the syringe. You have to watch your loved one's body as well for the fentanyl patches.
Right, but don't you think during that time that you were in shock? I think a lot of it is. You know, we're in shock because you can't believe somebody is this cruel and you don't know what to do when you're watching your loved one, you know, go into a coma. None of us had any idea, you know, what was happening, what we could do to stop it. And I think you're in shock at that point.
I definitely was in shock. And unfortunately, the way with my medical knowledge, that did not help me because I knew exactly what my mom was suffering when they started withholding the fluid. The withholding the fluid is more detrimental to the human body than withholding food, and her temperature skyrocketed. I know with my hands, I never touched a patient. In my nursing career, it felt as hot as my mom did, and I kept asking them to take her temp, and of course, they would refuse. But with my nursing mom's temp got up to at least 104 with the dehydration process.
Mhm. Yeah, and it's you just don't know what to do. I think even if you do have some medical background, you still can't believe this is happening. And when you ask the hospice staff, you know, why is this happening, then they just tell you, well, it's because it's a dying process. And we don't know any better, but we still know if your gut doesn't feel something, then you need to trust it.
Oh, definitely. They're very good at trying to bring the harsh intimidation. The intimidation tactics, like the lady called ahead of me, with them threatening to take her husband and put him in hospice and everything. I had that intimidation tactic on me with the administrator of the facility and the head of the nursing department. You know, if you continue to interfere, you're going to be removed and you won't be with your mother.
Right. Yeah, that was Irene that was saying that. Yeah. Yeah, it's tragic. And you're right about the group. You know, none of us are happy that we are a member of Murder by Hospice, because it means that we have experienced it and we have felt that grief and that pain, but we're glad that there is a place we can come, a safe place where people understand, you know, they're compassionate, you know. Right, unless we get, you know, a hospice nurse in there, like Liz was saying, that, you know, that wants to make fun of us or say, if this happened, why didn't you do something? So
they're not validating. We're right there witnessing and know what is occurring. They're not validating it.
Right, right, exactly, exactly. So do I have anybody else that wants to speak? I want to give everybody an opportunity, and then I'm going to just open up the mics and see. This is, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to do this is because in the group Murder by Hospice, you know, we make posts, and then somebody else, you know, will comment in the post, and you don't really know all these people. So I wanted to give people the opportunity tonight to talk, you know, to talk to each other instead of waiting, you know, putting a post. And that way, you know, you can recognize people's names, and it's just, you know, you get to know people a little bit better, I think, which is what I wanted to do. I have a lot of people on the line, but if you guys select one on your phone, I'll know that you want to speak. I mean, I can go down the list, but I don't want to put anybody on. You know, if you don't really want to talk, I don't want to make you feel like you have to. So if you raise your hand, or if you hit one, it raises your hand to me. So I'm looking to see. Okay, okay. And then I'm going to bring everybody. I'm going to bring everybody back in. So I just saw a different number here, 865. Let me bring 865 on. Beverly, thank you so much. And please stay on the line, because I'm going to bring people back in. So please stay with us.
Thank you, Marcia.
Okay. Okay, 865, you are live.
Hi, my name is Teresa Eilerman. I'm an RN, a registered nurse. My mother, Elizabeth Ann Meyer, is in the process of dying tonight with the family surrounding her and a priest. She is dying of a urinary tract infection that she developed on Monday. I'm a nurse. My husband is a doctor. And my niece, who kept her alive during my mom had a stroke February 3rd. And I drove up there to take care of her. And I stayed a week, and then I had a wedding for my daughter in Mexico City, and I left, and the hospice nurse called and said, I just want you to know your mom's death is imminent in the next 24 to 48 hours. And so I was getting ready to have this over-the-top wedding for my daughter, and it started that night. And so I called my niece, my right arm, Jenny, and she came in and drove up after working all day. She drove 12 hours to keep my mom alive. They were all screaming, give her morphine, give her morphine. It's been a battle, because my mom had a stroke, a left-sided stroke, but she soon started to show signs of life. So I'm asking all of you tonight to pray for Elizabeth Ann Meyer, because I was kicked out on March 15th. I was taking care of her, and I would have stayed there, but my medical paradigm, my husband was called by my brother and asked to not be involved in her medical care, to not give my mom any hope of improving. It just was a battle with them, and they were, it just blew up one day when I came in from doing some errands. And I had called, and my sister said, the hospice nurse is here, and my brother, and they're just mom seeing dinosaurs, so we're going to give her some Haldol for that. And, you know, she's just restless, and I thought, why is that? When I came back, I was like, she's seeing dinosaurs on the wall because you're not allowing her to get out of bed. And it was just, it's just been a struggle to give her food, water. She started swallowing well. She wanted to live. Now, she celebrated her 94th birthday on Monday, but she wanted to live. She showed signs of life immediately after we got her out of that hospital. She started swallowing, and my husband was my right arm. He was behind me all the time saying, how's she doing? Is she, remember, she doesn't have an IV. Let's give her water. How's she swallowing? How's she doing? And so he was constantly, I had this doctor behind me in the family who's well-respected and renowned in the country. And he loves his mother, and he was kicked out March 14th. My brother called him and said, please do not be a part of my mom's medical care. And I don't want you giving her any hope. You're not allowed to tell her that she's going to get better. And so that really infuriated me. And because, you know, when you're married, like, if you do that, we're a team. And everything I was doing, I was under the, my husband was helping me. And then he was telling me, oh, she's starting to look like she's hungry. Let's give her some Enter Plus. Go to the store. So Denny and I went to the store, got her Enter Plus. And he's like, get her head of the bed up, and let's get her up in the chair. After a month, you know, we got her on the side of the bed. They said she could never get out of the bed. I ordered a chair. It came, and the hospice nurse immediately took it away and said it would be $5,000. It's not covered by insurance, and she needs a special Hoyer lift. And, you know, she also wouldn't tolerate it because she couldn't hold her head up, and it would kill her. I mean, so my mom sat on the side of the bed for an hour and a half about a month and a half ago. Our family put her up. My niece Jenny and some of her family, they had her sitting up on the side of the bed. I took videos of it. And I told that to the nurse, Nurse Tanya, and Nurse Tanya said they do that right before they die. She said that right in front of my mother. It was just
constantly taking
her hope away. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I love my brother. I love my brother. He's a good man. I just know that we're all capable of blindness, no matter how close we are to the Lord. And he is very close to the Lord. And he was just like, how much morphine did you give her? He would have his hands folded and just look to see. Like, he didn't care the kind of care I was giving. And he gave COVID to the whole family. And my mom got it. And this is when Nurse Tanya, I was praying with her the day before. She wouldn't even look me in the eye. She came in after I'd been up every 2 hours with my mom, turning her, making sure she had liquids, giving her cough medicine. And my nieces were helping me. They were at the store, and she said, she didn't even look at me. She came in with her gown and gloves, and she said, and my mom was doing really well at this point. She's with her COVID that my brother gave her. The whole family got it. And she said, she came in with her mask and gloves, and she didn't even look me in the eye. She said, we've got to call your brother, who's the medical power of attorney, and we've got to call the hospice doctor. We've got to put her on scheduled morphine every 4 hours. And I was scared. I said, wait a minute. I said, wait till my nieces come back. Just wait till they come back. And
well, that's
back,
tragic.
He came in at the same time. It felt like an ambush. It really did. And they looked over. I couldn't even go out there. I was scared. I went back into the room, and my niece said, I'll just show Jenny, have Jenny talk to her. You don't have to go out there. Because I was scared, but I was also angry. I was just, you know, I mean, I was like, what is going on here? And so she showed her everything I was doing. She's like, well, keep doing what you're doing. But it felt like an ambush. It just felt like I was constantly trying to, like, I was being watched, spied on. Everybody didn't care, like, what kind of care I was giving my mother. The medical knowledge. I had a doctor behind me. My niece, you know, it was like we had a team. We had our own family doing this, keeping her alive. But they're winning now. My mom's dying of a urinary tract infection that's developed into sepsis, and she's dying now, and hospice has killed her. Her birthday was Monday, and I've been denied privileges of talking to her. I said, put her on the phone, and it was terrible. And it's just, they just denied. My mom is dying of medical neglect. She was murdered.
Yes. And she has a right to live the way she wants to live until it's her time to die. And giving somebody morphine, you know, as much as they're trying to give her, is not compassion. and she's not in pain.
They took her
and
the way. Yeah.
She wants to live, and she should be allowed to go her way in her time.
Yeah.
So I am so, so sorry that you're having to go through this right now.
It's torn the family apart. I'm seen as crazy, and I've been over here like a caged animal since March 15th in my house because I was kicked out of the house yelling and screaming by my sister and my brother. My friend, one of my prayer partners, heard was in my ears when I walked in onto the house. You know, and she heard them screaming at me. She said, they kicked you out. You know how when you have something like this happen, you're like, what really happened here? You know, and now they're saying it was just, they're lying. Everything is twisted. You know, when you live a lie, you start to believe your lie. And then you're just lying about everything. And they were lying about me like, oh, I left because it was too hard for me to do this kind of work. That's a lie. Every single moment I had with her was a grace and a gift. I loved her. She's my best friend. And I've been denied that. My brother, he removed me from knowing any kind of medical stuff. Last week, he took me off the charts. I wasn't allowed to know anything more. The latest I had heard was they doubled her morphine at night, and they increased it to every hour as needed. Why? Did she seem like she was screaming in agony? No, they're killing her. They're medically killing her.
They are. They are. And, I mean, it's sad if you don't have power of attorney and you've got part of your family working against you. It makes it incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I spoke to a priest the Thursday before I was kicked out, before all this happened. He finally called me, and I told him what was going on. It was a local priest in that area who I felt connected with. I had told him within 2 minutes after going to Mass one day, I'm Catholic, what was happening, and he got it. He said, well, you're wearing the St. Benedict medal. You know, he understood what is going on with hospice. He understood it. And so
are you in Murdered by Hospice group?
Yeah, my niece Jenny connected me. Yeah.
Okay, good, good. Because that is a place, too, that is very helpful.
It's just been traumatic for me because I've been like a caged animal, and this priest said, I'm really sorry, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's not on you, it's all on your brother. It's not your mom's fault, it's not yours, and if it gets too bad and you have to leave, it's not on you. But it was worth leaving because then I was totally in the dark, and then my brother removed my right to know anything medically. And then he did that to my sister. Like, she didn't know what was going on, and she's there all the time. He removed that from her. And it was just like, and then he's like, well, you know, our paradigms are different, but, you know, I love you, and, you know, I'm not holding any grudges. And I thought, this is not about holding grudges.
Our paradigms are definitely different. You want to save your mother, and he's just ready for her to be gone. And
Well, that's not his choice.
That's your mother's choice.
It's not.
That's your mother's choice, not his.
So just to kind of, you know, to get over this, like, it's just been total darkness since March 15th. Like, anyone that's had to be around me. And I know I have to surrender it to God's will, but it was like I was in prison and I was thrown a scrap every now and then. Like, you know, I was in the dark about everything. And whenever I heard anything, it was like it made it worse almost because I'm not there. It was like I was being crucified all over again.
Right. And your mom probably needs you. Your mom probably needs you to be there to hold her hand. You know, even if you can't. If you can't stop it from happening, at least you can be there to give her some comfort.
But I don't get along with the family.
Yeah.
I don't get along with
them. That's because you're trying to save, and they're not. So, well, I am so sorry, and we will definitely put Elizabeth Ann Meyer on prayer list tonight. I know there's several people listening that, you know, are – you know, do pray, and we certainly will. So I'm going to put you back in the screening room right now. So hold on, please. Okay. Liz. Liz, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
That's just that's heartbreaking to hear that. I just, you know, in a case like that, you don't, if you're fighting against your family, I hate to say you're doomed, but if they have the power of attorney, then there really is nothing that the other family members can do because you're fighting against that other person.
No, it's heartbreaking that they'd even be allowed to do this. You know, she wants to live, and they're not treating her. And she has the right to be treated. We all do. And they're stopping that and giving her morphine every couple of hours. I mean, this is murder, and this is where we're at in the healthcare system. We're all being preyed upon. We're all
calling.
Murdered. It is.
I mean,
it's
calling, and they're looking at her. She's 94 years old, and they're looking at her. What value does she have? And, you know, the brother's saying she wouldn't want to live this way. Well, some people want to live the way they're living, and they don't want you taking that away from them, and you don't have a right to take that away. No matter, you know, your quality of life is yours. It belongs to you, and you as an individual are the only one that should be able to make the decision on what you do want and what you don't want.
That's right.
So we've got some people that have come on here a little bit later, and if you have anything you want to say, you want to add your story, or you want to talk, you know, make a comment of something someone else has said, just select one on your telephone, and that will put you in a queue for you to talk. So I want to give everybody the opportunity. That's, you know, what tonight is about, is giving other people the opportunity to talk. So I think I just saw 609-553-2542. You're on the air.
Yes. Okay, that's me. I'm Sandy. I don't know.
Okay,
I just
Sandy.
Came on because I just was scrolling through Facebook and I didn't know about it previously. But I do go on this website quite often. And so I haven't heard what previous people have said. But my situation is my father was killed by hospice in September of 2014. So it's been a while. And basically, my mother was the POA, and my sister, who's a nurse, got it, put it together that they would do that to him and made sure he had not any food or water, and he was heavily sedated. And this was started on a Thursday. That previous Monday, 3 days before, I was with him at the nursing home, and he ate a full dinner with his knife and fork. Wasn't pureed, nothing. I brought him a nectarine. He ate that. He drank his coffee. We played checkers. And then I said goodbye. And then I didn't realize they were going to say that he was dying, even though he was still getting vigorous physical therapy 3 times a week and was scheduled for a home visit the following Tuesday. And so somehow they masterminded that. And when I came to visit him on Friday after I found out what happened, he couldn't even open his eyes, but he knew when I was there. He held my hand super tight, and he kind of smiled, and I dripped some water into his mouth. But I came back every day. What I regret was not staying there, like, the whole day and just making sure they didn't drug him, because I didn't know anything about this stuff, but I was really mad at my mother because I knew she had done it. I didn't know my sister was heavily involved. And so rather than talk to her and say, you better stop doing that or, you know, I'll never talk to you. But anyway, I just didn't talk to her anymore after that. And then he died 5 days later. And the problem for me is this. I'm finally able to function to a certain degree. I was trying to get his records, but I knew my sister would never sign off to, you know, because as siblings, we all have to sign off to get the medical records from the from the nursing home. But I knew she wouldn't, so I kept procrastinating and hoping I could get it. And now when I finally said, the heck with it, I'm just going to do it, the nursing home is just playing coy with me and is really adamant about me not getting them. And now they had me talking with the medical director, and then I finally talked to the, and then she stopped talking to me. And then I finally got the director on the phone of the whole nursing home, and she said, oh, his records are in some kind of repository. She told me the name, and I looked up the phone number. And when I called them, they said, we need the file number and the box number. And then when I called Gina back at the nursing home, she had my father's file right there. She knew his date of birth and everything. But she said, oh, we don't have his file number and box number. And besides, they destroy them after 7 years. But I'm thinking, you know, a lot of people don't do what they're supposed to do. His records might very well still be there. But
right.
I'm afraid to call them again because they might call the repository and say, make sure those are destroyed. So I'm trying to figure
well,
out.
Well, if you look, okay, you said you're a member in our group, in the
yes.
Murder by Hospice group. So up
yes.
at the top, there's a tab called Files. If you click on that tab called Files, you will see there's a document in there, go down, I don't know, like half a page or so, but it is how to acquire medical records on, you know, your loved one or, you know, from the hospital, from the hospice. And Ron Panzer, who used to, he was the founder of Hospice
yes,
Patient Alliance.
Yes, I know
Alliance,
of him. I used to read about him.
Okay, so he documented all this, and we have it in our files.
Mm.
So it tells you how
okay.
to acquire the medical records. And maybe if you did that and, you know, go step by step, then, you know, I think it's more official-like, and, you know, it's more like you know what you're doing and, you know, I want those medical records. And I don't know, Liz, you're still on. I don't know if there's anything, you know, I've heard about 7 years with your taxes, but I have a tendency to think they're just, you know, leading you around because they don't want to give them to you.
Yeah. Right.
But I don't know. Liz, do you know if records are destroyed after 7 years?
I don't think
records are ever destroyed.
I'm not aware of that, but has it been 7 years since this happened?
It's been
what,
9 years.
2014
okay.
to
it was September 2nd, 2014. And for some reason, I have it in my head not to let it go past 10 years because I feel like there might be some limit. But listen to this. This is the weirdest thing that I can't figure out at all. He was in a nursing home because he had previously had a stroke a few years ago. So he was in the nursing home, but when they put him on hospice, like I said, very last minute, my mom didn't even tell me. She was hoping I wouldn't come find out about it, but and that he'd be dead before, you know, she'd say, oh, he just died, you know. But anyway, this is the thing. When I am calling hospice now, before they were saying, oh, yeah, we'll try to get you the records. And now they're saying, we have no record of your father's name. What's his birthday? Give him his birthday, give him his name. We have no record of him at all. And they never said that before. They just said, we don't have him. It's not there.
Well, that sounds like
and
just
so,
a bold-faced lie.
Well, I
okay.
know that if you have requested medical records and you don't get them, to my knowledge, they have 30 days. And if you don't get them, you can file a complaint with the Office of Civil Rights. I recently
oh.
posted an article about that. It was probably within
we
the last week.
We just had that.
Yeah.
Really?
So that,
is this,
that's what
is
I
this
would,
Marcia, by the way?
I'm Liz.
Say again?
Oh,
that's
you're
Liz
is
talking.
Here. Mm-hmm. Okay, okay. Okay, so contract. Okay, so I had this had happened in New Jersey. I'm living out of state now, North Carolina. So I would contact the Office of Civil Rights for the state of New Jersey
and file a complaint.
Okay,
that's what I would do. And
because
see what
why? What you know? If they have his file at the nursing home, you know they have. You know, with his name and all his info. He was living there for close to 3 years. You know they have the file and box number, and apparently they really, neither one of them want me to get that information. And, of course, they don't because he wasn't even sick. I mean, not sick at all.
Well, it sounds
Sandy,
like
they're just, Yeah, I think they're definitely covering. The, this, I think it was like last week that it was posted in there that I think two facilities were actually had charges against them for not providing medical records. So if you, what's your last name?
Ivens, I-V-E-N-S.
Okay, I'll see if I can find you on there.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you look in the group, there was, Liz, did you post it? Who posted that?
I did post it, and it was probably about a week ago, maybe. Yeah.
See, I don't I don't always,
Yeah, well, go,
like if it pops
go in
up
there
on my
then,
feed, I read it, and then, you know, but,
see, sometimes it's not popping up because I don't think people want, Facebook doesn't want people to see what we're talking about. But Liz had done something. If you do a search in that, and we'll try to maybe tag you on it also. There is a way to get that information.
And what's the title of that article again? Ways to.
I don't recall exactly the title.
Okay,
but
it's about contacting.
The office of civil rights.
So this and that's a state office. State Office of Civil Rights.
Well, I was, I could be wrong, but I thought that was a federal office, and there may be state offices.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know at all. Okay, Federal Office of Civil Rights. All right. Because I had, we had a, in New Jersey, we had a different, what is it called, attorney general, and I made a complaint to him, but he never saw it. It was his aides who saw it, and they discounted it and didn't, you know, validate it. But we have a new attorney general. I mean, you know, the people who work under him would probably run interference and he'd never see it anyway, I guess. But you're saying the Office of Civil Rights is the one. And also, I was thinking of the DEA because this guy, he wasn't in any pain, and yet they gave him I don't know what to the point where he was unable to open his eyes. And yet he was, why were they giving him painkillers if he wasn't in pain?
Well, that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's, and they do it in hospitals now, too. And, of course, nursing homes. It's just, it's a quick way to get them to go. That's why.
Oh, God.
The article was HHS. HHS cracks down for civil rights.
What is
so I'll try to, you know, when I get on Facebook, I'll try to see if I can locate it and tag you on it if you can't find it.
And so, so it's HHS, as in Frank.
S, as in Sam.
Oh, S, okay. And what does that stand for, HHS? What does HHS stand for?
The Health and Human
Services. Okay. Cracks down on civil rights, you said?
Right, right. And it was about the same thing you're talking about, not giving the records.
Okay. Because I really want to get them. I mean, people say, why? You know, I know I'm not going to get any money, but honestly, my whole family, they just think, you know, my uncle says, well, they wouldn't do that to him unless he was sick, and everyone pretty much tossed me out. Because I didn't talk to my mother for a few years, and so I guess that's why I'm doing it. I just feel like I have to.
Right, you just
Sandy,
want to
this,
know.
This, excuse me for interrupting, Sandy. This is Kimberly. The website of HHS, it's www.hhs.gov, and there's a ton of information out there, and that should be able to help you access what you're looking for, specifically laws and regulations and how to obtain medical records. Because they're going to try everything they can to ban you from getting those records. And 2014, that was quite a while ago. And in Minnesota, it's 7 years that they have to hold on to records. Now, I don't know if that's strictly for Minnesota or if that is a nationwide statute. And so I hope that would be helpful information for you.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's hard to know what to do. I guess the money interference because they know that he wasn't dying and, you know, they did something wrong. And they had me talking to the director of medical records in the nursing home just for, you know, weeks going back and forth, emailing. She said, I'll send you the form. All of a sudden, silence. I couldn't hear from her at all. And I thought she, you know, maybe she wasn't working there anymore. And they said, no, she's working there. And then the director was like, no, we don't have it. And we don't have the file number or the box number.
That's false. That's not true. They have to retain the record, Sandy. I mean, I'm sorry, respectfully, they're giving you the runaround. Time has passed, but you still can try, you know, through, did you say you're in New Jersey and you're moving to North Carolina?
Yes, this all happened in New Jersey, but I'm
it
in North
did.
Carolina.
Well, I know I would reach out to the AG's office in New Jersey. I'd also try your health department as well, too. There should also be an ombudsman in your office as well.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know if they can help you.
They were so useless when my
father
was dying.
Yeah, I know. That's same for me in Minnesota.
No, they run cover for the hospice. They're like hand in glove with those people.
Well, that's very true. That's very true. But try that. And I know there is also, Marcia and Liz, maybe you can help me with this. I know there is a specific federal law. And is it the right to know or what is it, the right to access medical records? I can't think of the form off the top of my head. I know I've used it to get records
exactly
from the hospice.
The, Yeah, there
I
is.
Know. I can't think of it off the top of my
head,
but I can post
it
later.
You can email me, right?
We will. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really want to do it. I mean, I know I'm not going to get, like, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like I have to do something.
Yep. Well, that's part of the healing process.
Kimberly, I'm
going to
wake up in the middle of the night, and that's going to come to my mind of what that's
me too.
Called.
Me too.
Because, yes,
think
it
of it
is.
After.
You
absolutely.
Can write me on Facebook.
Absolutely, we'll do that.
Yeah, because they call it out all the time.
Oh, yeah. And then I was going to say the young lady that called in.
Well, I'm checking to see if anybody else selects one on
your
phone.
The young lady that called
Tanya
about her mom.
Say again?
Oh, the young lady that called in, the nurse, I think her name is Tanya, that called about her mother and the family interference. That's exactly what happened between my mother and I. My cousin from outstate, actually. What was
Teresa?
Her name? I'm sorry.
Teresa.
Excuse me, Teresa. Yes, yeah. Same thing. I went through the same thing of, you know, the family getting involved and you know, basing me. That was part of the reason they iced me out of the facility. I know that they played a part in that. And, you know, so I it's just tragic what she's going through. I understand. I can hear it in her voice and know what she's experiencing.
Yeah, she's terrified. I can tell that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is heartbreaking.
It is. It is.
Okay,
everyone's story.
I will open it up for people to, Beverly, I brought you back on, and I want to open it up for people if you want to make comments, talk to each other. I'd kind of like to know the medication, you know, if y'all can just give me what medication that your loved one was given, because I think we have a similarity here. So, Kimberly, what was your mom given again? Morphine?
Let's see. Ativan, morphine, Dilaudid, Seconal, Risperidone.
That's an antipsychotic.
The other that she was given. Librium. They pushed methadone and fentanyl, and she said no. And there were two others, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but those were the primary. Those were the primary. And again, remember, not in pain, not actively dying, given 24/7 these medications round the clock.
And you give people this number of medication, it's elderly person, and you
kill
have
them.
All kind of interactions, and they don't care.
No, they don't.
They don't care.
They don't.
No. Liz, what was Alan given?
In 3.5 days in the hospice facility, he was given 400 milligrams of morphine for no pain, 12 milligrams of Haldol, and 27 milligrams of Ativan. Yeah.
See, he got the ham sandwich.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
And the only
and
thing
no
that
pain.
No agitation. In fact, when they mentioned Haldol, I refused that, which is a patient's right. I was speaking for him, so I had the right to refuse that for him. They continued mm-hmm. to give it to him. They
yeah.
were giving
you know,
the same stuff without my knowledge.
Wow. Marcia,
and,
that was the other drug
yeah,
my mom was given to
no.
with Haldol.
Beverly, what was your mom given?
The Haldol morphine Ativan. But it was the fentanyl patches that she just wasn't strong enough to withstand. She was holding her own with the ham cocktail they refer to it as, but the fentanyl she could not tolerate if I just hadn't left her.
Yeah, and that's 100 times stronger than morphine. What do you know what micrograms she was on?
They started her with 2, but she had 2 different patches on. The one was 2 and one was 4.
Jeez.
Well, they're usually
well,
between 5 micrograms.
And my mom only weighed 98 pounds.
Good grief. They gave my mom 2 50 microgram patches. So
what?
She had 52 different patches, 50 each, for 100 micrograms. And they do it in micrograms because it is 100 times stronger than morphine, which is done in milligrams. And she had 100 micrograms and, you know, had severe reaction less than an hour after they put that on her.
Oh, Marsh, I'm sorry.
But they don't care. Well, thank you, Kimberly. And
I know they don't.
You know, I'm just sorry for everybody going through this because watching anybody die is hard. Yeah, but knowing they're being murdered
mm-hmm.
is beyond any comprehension. And if you've never been through it, you have absolutely no clue how horrible it is.
It is. It's like it's a horror movie that you live in. It just, it's you know, it never goes away. And, you know, that's why I think the young lady, Teresa, when she spoke about being banned from the facility and, you know, being, you know, not involved. And the sad part is I was my mother's HCA and POA, and still they blocked me.
Wow.
We were taken out of it, too. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I just...
It's a common thing that happens when a family member tries to stop the drugging and the murder,
yeah.
that they will ban you from the facility and not
exactly.
let you come back. And that's what
exactly.
it is.
You're considered combative.
Yes.
And
oh,
you
yeah, that's exactly
just,
what they said.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And you need to just leave them alone and let the process take place. So, in other words, I just yeah. need to leave my mom alone so that you can kill her.
Pretty much, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, that's and the fact that, you know, and again, I'm sure that, Marcia, we talked about this. You know, I was told that I wasn't accepting her death. I wasn't realistic about, you know, her cancer diagnosis. You know, I wanted her to die writhing in pain. I actually had a physician say that to me, and I said, you can leave the room now, sir. I don't want to speak with you.
Yeah. Well, they wrote that in my mom's record, too. Daughter doesn't care for mother's in pain.
It's just twisted. It's so twisted.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Can
you
guys
hear
me? The terminology they used against me was I was interfering with the medical care.
I've heard that one, too.
Right.
I think
right.
that's their standard operating method. And, you know, and that's the only way, you know, and, you know, I don't know any other way to describe it. You think of a crime victim when they're saying, I was assaulted or this happened to me. And they're like, oh, no, that never happened to you. You remember, I mean, there's so much medical gaslighting that goes on. It's just, it's even you try to advocate. And the more that I tried to advocate, the worse it became. And I can see that running theme throughout all of us that have experienced this. And the sad part mm-hmm. is even if you have the knowledge and you think that you can do something, it doesn't matter. And even if you don't have the knowledge, you still try. They have their own agenda. They're going to continue culling people until collectively this has to stop. But unfortunately, hospice is a cash cow. So is Medicare. You know where that's going to go.
Correct. And that's what it's all about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody just said, can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, Minnie and someone else.
Just going to ask something. I don't want to hog up all the time. but and everyone else is saying all these interesting things. But my question is, I'm 69, and how do we prevent it? I have two questions. How do we prevent this from this happening to us? Like, what can we put? I know don't put DNR because forget it. And the other thing, in the ham sandwich, what does the M stand for?
The morphine. M stands for morphine. It's Haldol, Ativan, and morphine.
Oh, okay. Because I heard you say fentanyl, too.
Well, that was me. Kimberly, I said fentanyl.
On, yeah.
I just want to add something in here that is going to, like, freak everybody out. My husband at one point asked, he said, can I have some Tylenol? Because he knew he was sick. He didn't have sepsis. And he said, I would like some Tylenol for my pain because I want to be able to discuss and talk some things over with my wife. They said, we don't have any orders for Tylenol. All we can give you is morphine. Now that, I mean, that is clear evidence that they didn't want him conscious and talking and saying what's going on here because, you know, it's just evidence that these people know exactly what they're doing it with purpose.
But how can we prevent it from happening to us?
That's what I'm talking about, too, because I'm 67. I don't know.
Okay, first you have to have a medical power of attorney, which several people have talked about how that, you know, didn't help them. But halovoice.org has a life-affirming medical proxy document. I would suggest that everybody has that and put who you trust, who will follow your directions. And as long as you are cognizant and awake, you can make your own decisions and you tell them what you do and don't want. And if you're not able to because you're, you know, something happened, an accident happens or something, then the person that you give the authority to sign for you is somebody you trust, somebody who loves you, somebody who knows what you want and will follow through. The other thing I would say is I personally will never go into hospice. If I'm dying, I will die here in my home or where I will never allow hospice to be near me or anybody in my close proximity of my family because I don't trust hospice. I've seen too many horrible things that they've done. If you're, you know, trying to protect yourself, if you, I don't know if you, you know, have somebody else, a husband or a child or a sibling
I
that
don't.
Can help.
And my whole family, since this thing happened with my father, they stole my inheritance and we don't even talk anymore. And the money was from my father. It was all my father's money. Well,
do you have
a close
friend or anybody?
I have a friend in New Jersey.
Okay, so if you have someone there with you, like if you have to stay overnight in hospital or, you know, then have somebody there with you that knows what you want, that you've given them power of attorney, and, you know, tell them absolutely you do not want to be, you know, put into a coma so that you're not conscious to make your own decisions. The problem is if you something really bad happens and you have to have surgery or they have to give you morphine because you really are in pain and they're minimizing it, you know, you're in a bad situation. It's unfortunate, but the older that all of us get, we're at risk.
Well, I mean, if I was getting an operation, of course I would want painkillers. But if I was just like my father was, just laying, just sitting there like in a normal day and all of a sudden they start doing that, I wouldn't want that. But, you know, when I was at my doctor's a few months ago, they had, because I'm on Medicare, they said, here, meet with this person over the phone. And then she gave me these forms to fill out, which I never did yet because I'm still sort of catatonic. Just fill out these forms, and this will express what your wishes are. Couldn't I give that copy to my doctor? Like, I only want morphine if I'm, you know, getting operated on or something like that, or in real pain.
Well,
and
you could.
I don't want hospice.
Do you trust him? Do you trust him to follow through with what you say? I mean, it's not like he's your friend.
No.
I mean,
it's
yes, you could
woman,
give him
and
that,
it's a doctor.
But
I mean, I don't know. I don't think she would just – just say, oh, I don't care what this says, you know, or maybe she wouldn't even think of accessing it. I don't know. But I don't know.
Well, it suggests
keep it with you
in your purse, what you want.
Hmm.
Go ahead, Kimberly.
Always keep it with me. That's kind of morbid. I'll be carrying around my wishes in my purse. But
what you have to consider, too, and this isn't to berate everyone in the medical community, but this is about what you want and what you're comfortable with, and that's why I'd be very cautious about signing documents that you don't know what's being presented to you. Sometimes this can happen if people don't read something and they don't know. And Marcia referenced, you know, the halovoice.org. They're a wonderful organization. They have lots of, again, resources on their website, and you can create your own type of healthcare directive or living will based upon your wishes and then designate someone. But Marcia's correct. What she's saying is correct. I mean, you need to be cautious in what you're doing and you know, think about yourself, what's best for you, and not be frightened about it. It is frightening to think about. It is for all of us. I mean, I'm aging. I don't have family. I'm an only child. I don't have anyone that can help me. I have a few friends that would be willing to come forward, but God forbid an emergency happens. I mean, I want my wishes documented. I don't know. And same with Marcia. There's no way hospice would ever come near me, ever.
No.
Never.
So I should put that on whatever form I'm filling out.
Yes, ma'am, whatever your wishes are.
Letters, I don't want hospice under any situation.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I would never sign a DNR.
Yeah. Correct.
No,
absolutely.
I don't want a DNR. I want to be resuscitated.
Is anybody aware? I'm Irene. Is anybody aware?
Irene, go ahead.
There's some kind of a saying in, I believe it. I want to say it's just in a hospital code or something. That
are you talking about the
three doctors? Hello.
Are you talking about a pulsed form?
No, I don't know what it is exactly. But if three doctors say you have no chance of survival, that they can impose hospice on you in some shape or form. Is anybody aware of that? Because I've become aware of that it can even override your desire to remain full code.
I'm not aware of that.
No, I'm not either.
Kimberly,
I know.
I'm trying to investigate it.
Liz?
Close? I'm sorry.
Irene, are you talking about when a doctor drafts a certificate, you know, indicating you have 6 months or less to live? Is that what you're referring to?
That would be a doctor that would be for hospice, but I am investigating something that I found out recently that I'm not really sure how they even phrase it or something. It's that a hospital can say, you know, three doctors can say that this person is not viable and that there's no medical reason to continue treating them.
That's a case by case basis. I mean, there are instances when a physician could override, like in my mother's case, you know, I mean, but he sided with what, you know, what she wanted because she signed a DNR and a pulse. But, technically, no. A physician can't do that. It's illegal for them to do that.
Well, there is in the state of Texas, which they've changed it. I think Elizabeth was talking about it a couple of weeks ago. There was a 10-day ruling, and that if they decided that you're not viable and they can't help you any, then they can say you got 10 days and you have to leave the hospital. But I think they've changed that now to, I think there's a 24-hour I mean, a 24-day period now instead of 10 days. But I would check halovoice.org and ask them if they are aware of that.
Yeah, Halo, that's a good information. I'm going to – there's a woman I'm
and
talking
I think
to right. Yeah.
Yeah, check halovoice.org and ask them that question. They also have a hotline that you can call, and they'll call you back within 24 hours.
Okay.
And it's on their website. I would ask them because I've not heard that.
Okay.
That's interesting. But to protect yourself, I would never sign a DNR. I personally would never let hospice in my realm. And make sure that you have a life-affirming medical proxy document with somebody, if, you know, if you don't have family, but, you know, a friend, a close friend, you know, like Kimberly was saying, that with somebody that would protect you and do what you want. So it is scary. And, you know, as all of us get older, you know, we have to think about that. So we have several of the callers on here. I have, you know, don't have any indication that you want to say anything, because if you don't push one, then, you know, I don't want to bring you live on air. But if you want to say something, we have a few minutes left. If you select one on your phone, it will put you in a queue. And I am not seeing anybody else, so, okay. All right, well, this is, we have 4 minutes left, and this has been interesting. I wanted to give people the opportunity to, you know, talk amongst yourself, and I think we've done that. If it's something that y'all think that, you know, we might want to do, you know, perhaps next quarter or, you know, 3 or 4 weeks from now, you know, let me know in Facebook, and, you know, we can certainly make that happen. And then maybe some of the other people that are on the line now might feel comfortable, you know, talking during our next session. So anybody have anything they want to add before we close?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone for the wonderful commentary, and both to Liz and Marcia yourself and everyone that shared their stories, and just appreciate all the feedback.
Yeah, I think that was good. Thank you, Kimberly.
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead, Beverly.
I was going to say, Marcia, when I was ill in the hospital and my heart ejection factor down to 15%, I voiced my concerns about hospice to my cardiologist. And he said one way to ensure not be placed there is place in writing hospice is against your religious beliefs.
Oh, okay.
Cool. That does sound cool.
Okay,
yeah.
Sandy, did you hear that? Yeah, I like that. I think I'm going to add that to my power of attorney. I like that. Hospice is against my religion.
And
I like
it. My cardiologist.
Uh-huh. Yeah, same thing with so-called vaccines. So,
yes,
yeah,
definitely.
I like that.
I'm just really curious if there are any doctors or nurses that know that are on our side. That's something I'm trying to glean out of things.
I think some of them are. We just, you know, that, you know, they get vilified if they go against hospice or, you know, the hospital or something. They're vilified, and maybe they don't speak out.
Okay.
Beverly, I got to ask you one thing. Did I hear Tom Puppy a while ago?
I'm sorry, did you hear Tom Puppy?
Did I hear Tom Puppy a while ago?
You did. He was ready for dinner.
I thought I heard him.
He signed in.
Yeah.
He didn't even press one, Marcia. He just going right in.
So, okay. Yeah, I thought I heard him. Okay. Well, we are closing down tonight, and thank you so much for everybody that called in. And Liz, thank you for helping me get this together and to do this.
Well, thank you, Marcia.
And for the group, I'm very, very grateful for the Murder by Hospice group. So,
thank you, everyone.
So,
thank you as well.
Everybody,
good night, everyone.
Good night to everybody, and I hope you have a good weekend. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, Marcia's lived in Virginia so long, she lost her Macon, Georgia southern accent.
You think I have a southern accent?
How long has she been in that group?
I think 15 years.
Wow. She's the one that you went to church with that sings the songs and stuff? Is she on that thing? Mom? Is Marcia the one that sings? She sings?
No, oh my goodness. I'm trying to think of the one that sings. Oh my gosh. Hottie's the one with the doggies.